the Night, a story by Frederick Pohl, Tunnel Under the World.
On the morning of June 15, Guy Burkhart woke up screaming. It was more real than any dream he'd ever had in his life. He could still hear and feel that sharp metal-ripping explosion, that searing wave of heat. He sat up.
Mary! 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 Mary, where are you?
Guy, what's wrong? You're trembling.
Where were you?
In the kitchen cooking breakfast. What is it?
Oh, a dream, I guess. An explosion.
Did you say an explosion?
Yes.
But that's the dream I had.
What?
I dreamed there was a big explosion and then something sort of hit me on the head.
Holy smokes. Maybe there really was some sort of explosion and it started the streaming.
Well, there'll be an explosion down at your office if you don't hurry and get to work.
Coming in on the bus, Burkhart watched to see if there was any evidence of an explosion. There wasn't. If anything, the town looked better than ever. The only thing that seemed strange to him was the fact that none of the usual crowd was on the bus.
Little bozo sitting in the draft. One went crazy and the rest all laughed. Eight dumb bozos riding in a van. They can't get there, then no one can.
Everyone's a bozo on this bus. Zips and Bean are sitting next to us. Are you a hostage? Are you a spy?
Just some bazooka who's prepared to die.
He was a little relieved when he did see his old pal, Henry Swanson.
Excuse me.
Henry.
You pardon me, sir, please.
Henry, what's the matter with you? It's me, Guy Burkhart.
Burkhart? Sorry, I don't believe we've met.
What? Henry, for Pete's sake, it's me.
If you'll excuse me, this is my stop.
Well, I'll be... How do you like that?
Guy Burkhart got off in front of the gigantic Contro Chemical building and took the elevator to the 98th floor, where he had worked in the accounting department for 12 years.
I came out of 12 years of college and I didn't even know how to sew. All I could do was account. I couldn't even account for myself.
It wasn't until he was almost at his floor that he realized the speaker wasn't playing the usual commercials.
Are you happy with your present home freezer? Of course not. Well, the answer to your problem is a Feckle Freezer. Feckle Freezers are better freezers. Most wives would do anything for a Feckle Freezer. Are you happy with your present home freezer? Of course not.
Good morning, Miss Orton.
Good morning, Mr. Burkhart.
A new hairdo, I see.
Well, yes. Do you like it?
Makes a lot of difference in your appearance. Is Mr. Barth in?
Why, no, sir. He had an appointment with Mr. Dorchin at the advertising agency.
Today? But today's the 15th of June. He has to sign the quarterly statement.
He said he wouldn't be in.
That's mighty peculiar.
Yes, sir.
Oh, by the way, Miss Horn, what the devil is a Feckle Freezer?
I would like to say a word for the Hanging Athenian Gardens, you know, one of our oldest sponsors.
Did they hang here. That Athenian yet?
Well, he's hanging, of course, as we all know, out in front of this great restaurant. They feature our Armenian food, geek dancing, and those live chickens that you've heard so much about. There's free cheese logs to every woman over 45 who goes in this week only.
Oh, wonderful. I'm so glad I'm in town.
Well, sweetie, don't forget the cheese log throw every Thursday, and you'll get a free sparring partner if you come unaccompanied.
I don't believe in throwing fights. I fight fair.
You do? Ever sat on an antique cheese log? I can't even say it without making a Freudian slip.
I'm in town.
An antique cheese log chair?
I'm not in town for fun. I'm in town because Mr. Foster died, and we're freezing him.
He's going to be Mr. Foster Freeze then,
that's
right?
That's ridiculous.
That's really...
That's true, but that just happened.
I'm sorry, that's cruel. That's very
it
cruel.
It is, it's true and it's cruel. We're going to freeze him, and then we're going to charge admission to come and see it. We're going to put it in the basement. We figure it's the only way we can afford it.
Well, tell me, are you going to freeze him by normal cry... Don't cry. By normal cryogenic methods?
Yes, we're going to cryogenic methods. We kill him first, and then we freeze him.
Oh, he's not dead?
No, you can't freeze a live person. It's not allowed.
That's murder.
So yes,
murder.
So we have to...
He's alive and well? I mean, he's...
Oh, he's fine.
He's in good shape.
You'd like to meet him? Here he is.
Hiya, Pete. Hiya.
Mr. Foster, you don't mind if I... You don't mind if I just open this up to general discussion?
Call me Frosty.
Okay. Hey, Frosty, are you aware of the fact that your wife has designs on your
oh,
life?
Oh, she's crazy as a coot, you know?
I know, but...
Oh,
She put away the money for it and just sprung it on me last week.
Well, it was going to be a surprise.
Well, no. You want me to tell it or you want to tell it?
No, you go ahead, John.
Okay. She sprung it on me, the dear little thing, and I... what was I going to say? I wept, for a long time, and they collect the tears, you know.
They do.
Oh, yeah, that's what they freeze. Yeah.
They do, really, oh, just yeah, like yeah. orphans' tears. It's good luck, you know.
Right, indeed. Yeah. Most of the tears they get, in fact, are from orphans and yeah, refugees.
Sure. They're orphans,
and
particularly.
Refugees.
And they freeze their parents often first to make orphan tears.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. God, it's a great...
If it's good enough for Walt Disney, it's good enough for my John.
Do you want me to...
You're going to freeze your John, too? You could invite people to come into that, too.
Foul-minded pervert.
Well, that's because of all the chickens I've been straightening lately.
Well, I'll just sit down. I'm certainly glad you guys let me come.
Watch out for the cheese
log.
This story was based on true happenings, and the thread of it is the escape of a young Union soldier from a southern...
A feckle freezer?
There's some new copy on the elevator commercial. Dorchin must have landed another account. Feckle freezers.
I really don't know, Mr. Burkhart.
It's a funny day. Can't quite put my finger on it. There's something strange going on.
He couldn't shake the thought out of his mind. It persisted all through the day and through dinner. He was still brooding as he and Mary got ready for bed.
I guess I'll get a good night's sleep. Coming?
I think I'll sit up and read for a while.
All right, dear. Good night.
Good night, dear.
At exactly midnight, Guy Burkhart lapsed into a sudden, deep sleep. And the following morning, he woke up screaming.
Darling, what is it? What's wrong?
Oh, nothing. A bad dream, I guess.
Oh, you gave me such a shock.
I seem to be having a lot of nightmares lately.
Really?
Yes. The one I had yesterday. This was the same. A big explosion and then nothing.
You had a dream yesterday?
Of course I did. You had the same sort of dream.
I? Oh, Guy, you're mistaken. I don't remember dreaming.
Mary, you told me.
Guy, you're mistaken.
But, Mary...
Maybe you dreamed I had a dream. Maybe...
Yes.
We'll return for Act Two of Maxwell Morgan, Crime Cabbie. After these words for Dreamo Cigars from surrealist bandleader Salvador Cugat.
Men, stop envying those big black Cuban cigars that make your favorite smoke look like a dead man's finger. Now, Dreamo Cigars, the first choice of men with a nickel to spend, are proud to introduce Dreamo Negros, a surprisingly big cigar, made bigger with plenty of rich, dark, heavily veined Havana wrapper, moist, meaty filler, and an attractive pre-dilled tip that the ladies love. Look for three super straight styles, Primo, Perfecto, and El Maximo. For men with more on their mind than just action, Dreamo Negros, just what you've been wishing you could have.
Dreamos. A psychologically tested product of S. Putt & Sons, Russellville, Kentucky.
I might have done that, I suppose. Everything did seem sort of strange yesterday.
That's probably it. You'd better get dressed, dear. Today's the 15th, and that's when the quarterly statement...
The 15th?
Yes.
Well, then, there must have been a dream. Because yesterday was the 15th.
Memories of San Diego, 1943.
42!
Guy Burkhart got up, dressed, ate breakfast, and took the usual bus to work. Once again, everything seemed even brighter and newer than usual. Once again, he was puzzled when he noticed none of the old crowd on the bus.
Pardon me, please.
Look, don't shove so. Oh, Henry, good morning.
Morning.
Don't you recognize your neighbors?
I don't believe we've met.
Henry, it's me, Guy Burkhart. What's going on?
I'm sure I don't know, sir. For God's sake, don't talk to me.
What is it? Are you being followed or something?
Don't you know? I was sure you remembered.
Remembered what?
Who are you?
Oh, hello, Mac.
What is it you want?
I'm here to see Dr. Rupp.
Excuse me, worker. I'll be just a nanosecond. Oh. Well, close B, close mode on Deputy Dan. Now, where do you come from?
I come from the shadows, Mac.
Oh, hold. Start Chinese fireworks early. 701, start fireworks. 703, reactivate restroom. 705, start emergency Mount Morgan Plano review. Thank you. Now, what do you want?
I told you, I want to see Dr. Rupp.
Hold, I read Gypsy Doctor.
Oh, wait a minute. Is that Dr.
Repeat, I read Gypsy Doctor.
I can't remember. That's it. I'm here to see Dr. Memory.
Laugh. Run away. That is an illegal program.
Tough grid, Mac. That's who I am.
Well, we'll just have to see the doctor about this.
I can't talk. This is my stuff, so will you please excuse me?
Henry, for Pete's sake.
As in yesterday's dream, Guy Burkhart got off at his stop and took the elevator to the 98th floor. The speaker in the elevator purred a new commercial this time.
Marlin cigarettes. They're sanitized. Does your present cigarette make your throat feel raspy and unpleasant? Marlin cigarettes contain a miraculous new drug which actually gives you the sensation of smooth, creamy smoke. Marlin cigarettes. Marlin cigarettes.
You carry the big whip.
Wick. That's a wick. The Acme Whip Wick.
Why, that little gadget will blacken peasants' houses throughout the globe.
And where there's smoke, there's work. Yes.
He walked down the marble corridor to his office.
Good morning, Mr. Burkhart.
Good morning, Miss Horn.
You like my new hairdo?
Why, yes. Is Mr. Barth in?
No, sir. He had an
appointment with Mr. Dorchin at the agency. I know.
You know?
I guessed it anyway. And today's the 15th of June, and he won't be here to sign the quarterly statement. And I'm going nuts. Let me have a cigarette, will you?
Yes, sir. Try one of these. They're Marlins.
I never heard of Marlins before today. What are we? A bunch of guinea pigs for Dorchin's new advertising accounts?
Is something wrong, Mr. Burker?
Wrong? Perish the thought, Miss Horn. Perish the thought. Hello?
This is Swanson. Henry Swanson.
What is it?
Do you remember?
Remember what?
Just remember.
Good morning, Mr. Tirebiter. This is your service. Time to wake up.
Oh, that's all right, my dear. I've been up all night watching myself on the TV.
Oh.
I don't suppose there'd be any messages for me this morning.
Just a moment. Yes, sir, there are some. A Mr. Sennett call.
Mr. Sennett?
And a Mr. Keaton, Babe Hardy, Stan Jefferson,
Stan,
and Mr. Dunkerfield, or a Mr. Roach. Am I going too fast?
Mr. Roach? Oh, no, I'm remembering them all. This is wonderful. Is there anyone else?
Well, there was a Mr. Turpin, a Mr. Fetchett, and a Mr. He wouldn't leave his name.
Oh.
A Mr. Lloyd.
Just a moment.
I have
to go get an ice cream cone. Hold on, I'll be right back.
Listen, Henry, let's stop playing games. Yesterday, either I was dreaming or you snubbed me on the bus. Today, the same thing happens.
You do remember, thank heavens. I thought so when I saw you, but I couldn't be sure.
What is it you want?
Listen, tomorrow morning, when I get off the bus, you get off with me. But be casual. They may be watching.
Who may be watching? Swanson. Hello?
You bus, Miss Burkhart?
Yes. I'm still out of cigarettes. Would you buy me a pack of Kelvins?
Wouldn't you rather have Marlins?
I smoke Kelvins.
But, Mr. Burkhart, Marlins have that soft, creamy smoke that's so soothing to your throat.
You really believe that stuff?
It's true.
Smokers, doesn't this sound familiar?
Hold it right there!
No, I think I'll hold it over here.
If I knew just what I had to say. Oh. I'm Nick Danger with another word of advice for you men. You know, here in the radio studio, it's all dinge and dinger, but when that on-the-air sign goes off, I'm just plain Ed Eagle, actor, Indian, and second-class citizen. You know where I come from, most folks like to pass around a pipe because the spirits in the air around us can get overloaded from the stress and strain that most of us working men call real life. So when I get home, I like to fill up my calabash with a fresh load of goat's head type pipe tobacco. Light a match with my sharp thumbnail and enjoy one heck of a good smoke. It doesn't just blow the brimstone out of your brain, it appeases all those friendly spirits right on down the line.
So get with it, man. Buy a pouch today. And remember what the folks back on the reservation say.
Goat's head pipe tobacco, goat's head pipe tobacco, goat's head pipe tobacco, goat's head pipe.
Yes, it's devilishly good.
I wouldn't say this, Mr. Burkhart, except that, well, I've gotten to know you pretty well, and I've grown to admire you so much.
I see.
Would you mind, Mr. Burkhart, if I told you that for months now I've wanted to, well, just comfort you. I know how troubled you've been.
You've never mentioned your feelings, Miss Horn.
April. My first name is April.
That's a pretty name.
You see, I do have your welfare at heart. That's why when I see you smoking Kelvins, and I know Marlins are so much better, won't you let me buy some of them for you?
I suppose so. Why not? Here, you bring me a carton.
Thank you, Mr. Burkhart. Guy. I'll be back.
There was something wrong. Something definitely peculiar about what was happening. The call from Henry Swanson, the strange behavior of this secretary, Miss Horn, these new products, the dream. Guy Burkhart went home that night feeling like a man in a nightmare.
That you, dear?
Yes, me.
Have a good day.
Fair.
Oh, before you sit down, would you go down the cellar and put in a new fuse?
Portobello International Pictures presents The Fuse of Doom, a new Frank Acme serial thriller, part two, The Curse of Cobra Valley. As we departed our last mesmerizing episode, the mysterious electrician had struck at the overtly furnished home of Jonas Acme, industrial giant, paralyzing Dr. Arktype and stealing his most valuable invention, the Zeppelin Tube, a great tool for good or evil. We'd rejoin our story as publisher Charles Foster Dudley says...
Arktype! Arktype! Look at that glassy stare in his mouth.
This is terrible, Dudley. My tube's been purloined.
See here, Acme.
Here? I don't see
no, over
spot.
There. Oh, over there. The professor's got a fuse in his mouth. Ooh. A blown fuse.
I parked the plane on the boat, Dad. Is the party still going on? Oh, hey, what happened to Dr. Arktype?
Frank, I don't think you've ever met my old friend and newspaper magnate, Charles Dudley.
Oh, it's an honor, sir.
No, it's a pity.
Oh, that too.
No, it's a pity we have to meet at a time like this, Frank.
Oh, sorry.
Time is of the essence, Dud. Don't ever forget that. You too, Frank.
All right.
Okay, I forgot it because I forgot to take my ginkgo martini here, all around, nice and dry. Not too dry, and there's no time left like the present. We've got to get Arktype functioning again. Mm-hmm. We've got to find the tube.
I say, Frank, do you happen to have a spare fuse?
Well, sir, a pilot like me needs one of everything, sure. Here.
It may be too late.
Wait. He's coming around.
He's coming around again.
Professor! Professor, speak to me. Tell me, the fiend who stole the Zeppelin tube. Who was he? What does he want?
Sir, excuse me, but he can't act with that fuse in his mouth.
Superb thinking, son.
Thank you.
Here, I'll twist it out, like I did last summer.
The switch in the hall closet blew out, and I shut it off.
Okay.
Supper will be ready in a minute, so don't start fooling around with that old boat hull you've been building.
I won't.
Do, 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 do.
Mary! Mary!
What is it?
Come down here. Hurry up.
What is it?
I'm not sure. I was looking for a fuse, and I thought maybe I'd drop one under the boat hull, so I scratched around. Look. Let me put the flashlight on it.
Well?
Look at the floor.
What about the floor?
It's supposed to be cement.
Well?
It's copper. There's a thin layer of cement, but underneath it's metal. Look here. Underneath the concrete. More metal. And here, on the wall. Metal. Metal under the floor, behind the walls, every place.
Well, I don't really understand.
Mary, I know this sounds crazy, but somebody, for reasons I can't begin to guess, has taken this house and replaced it with a clever imitation.
Guy.
I know it sounds insane, but take a look. That bracing on the beams. That isn't the bracing that was always there.
Oh, you're imagining.
I am not imagining. Mary, I'm going to look around for a little more.
Well, your dinner will be ready.
Save it for me. There are a couple of things I have to figure out.
The following morning, Guy Burkhart woke up screaming. He dragged himself into the kitchen where his wife Mary was preparing breakfast and discovered it was still June 15th.
Mary, Mary, listen.
Guy, what is it? You're trembling.
Mary, the dream.
Dream?
About the explosion. The same one we've been having.
We? I didn't dream about any explosion.
You did. Why are you covering up?
Covering up? Guy, what's happened to you?
It happened. It happened.
What?
Where's the morning paper? Where is it?
Outside the door, I guess.
June 15th.
Somewhere in the South Pacific, 1943.
Two.
Well,
you'd better hurry. Today's the day Mr. Barth fills out the quarterly tax return.
No, it isn't.
What?
He won't be there. He'll be at a meeting with the head of the advertising agency.
Mr. Dorchin?
He'll be there. And Miss Horn will have a new hairdo. And the elevator will be selling some new product. And Swanson.
What about Swanson?
Swanson. He's... I wonder if it's going to be the same today or whether...
Guy, what in the world are you talking about?
Nothing. Where's my coat?
You haven't had breakfast.
I don't want to miss my bus. I'll see you tonight.
Guy Burkhart got on his bus. There were the same unfamiliar faces, the same unusually new-looking buildings, the same unusually bright sunshine. And Henry Swanson, pale and furtive.
Oh, excuse me, sir.
You're quite all right.
Do you remember the phone call?
Yes.
Oh, thank heaven. Get off at the next corner and follow me.
Where are you going?
There's an excavation for a building about a block down. But make sure you aren't followed. I'll go first. Burkhart. Burkhart, here behind the fence.
Now, Henry, what's this all about?
Just a minute. I want to make sure you aren't followed.
Followed by whom?
By them, of course.
And just who are they?
I'm not sure. At first, I thought perhaps they were Russians. Now I'm beginning to think they're Martians. No humans could have accomplished what they've accomplished.
Look, start from the beginning, Henry. What's going on?
Burkhart, peculiar things have been happening to you, right?
Yes.
A lot of your friends are missing. Your house seems changed.
Yeah, there's something stranger than that. The date. Today is June 15th. Yet I could swear that yesterday was June 15th and the day before that.
Yes, you've got it. It's always June 15th. And you and I are the only ones who know it.
But why? How?
I'm not sure. I think it's some sort of mass hypnosis or something.
Why didn't it work for us? My wife Mary doesn't remember things.
Somehow, when it happened, they missed us. We were protected from the full force of the rays or whatever they use. Burkhart, where were you on the night of the 14th, about midnight?
That was Sunday night.
Yes.
I was down in the cellar, under that boat I'm building.
And I was in my dark room developing some pictures.
It just doesn't make any sense to me. Russians, Martians. What makes you think so?
I've seen them.
Where?
At the end of the tunnel.
What tunnel?
The one that they built under Tyler Town.
A tunnel under Tyler Town?
Yes, that's right.
We could use Tunnel R, sir, for a while, but we filled up the last half of it with dirt from Tunnel C, so we'll have to take a detour through Tunnel N.
Well, that's all right.
No, it's not, sir. You see, Tunnel N doesn't go anywhere.
It doesn't.
Well, it does and it doesn't, sir. It does go all the way through to Tunnel O, but it's monsoon season in Tunnel O. But it does run pretty close to Tunnel P, which the Germans are using for training.
No matter what you say, I'll go home in Tunnel A.
Tunnel A is our best alternate route, sir.
Where does it begin?
Under the pseudo-latrine in the Commandant's office. It's a sheer drop for about 1,000 yards.
Well, we can get used to that.
And then it gets a little nasty.
It's made out of copper or some alloy.
Wait a minute. I found a copper layer under my cellar floor last night.
Yeah, so did I. That's how I discovered it. I found a way to get in, too. It's at the bottom of this excavation.
Holy mackerel. Why don't we tell the police?
Because we can't trust them. Even the police may be Martians in disguise.
You're being melodramatic.
Am I? You just come with me.
Where?
Into the tunnel. I'll show you.
Henry Swanson led Guy Burkhardt to a small hole in the side of the excavation. There he removed a cut-out piece of metallic substance, and they crawled into a dimly lighted tunnel. They walked for what seemed like 2 miles, until Swanson held his finger to his lips.
We've got to be quiet now.
Henry, this is fantastic. They've got a tunnel right under the whole town.
Oh, Burkhardt, you haven't seen anything yet. There's a room a little further down. We'll be able to look through a glass in the door.
Is it safe?
It's perfectly safe. Unless one of them comes along. Now, come on. Here. Look through this glass. Now, just so I know I'm not completely insane, tell me what you see.
Good Lord.
Well?
A tremendous panel. Dozens of telescreens, and in front of each, a servo robot. They seem to be computing something.
Yes. I've watched them. They're evaluating data from the screens.
Evaluating?
Why not? Each of them has a part of a human mind, remember that?
It's against the law to transfer an evaluating circuit from a human brain to a robot.
Burkhardt, whoever is conducting this monstrous experiment is operating far outside the law.
Have you gotten a chance to look at the data on those screens?
No. No, I've been afraid to go in. There might be a warning circuit somewhere.
If we knew what those robots were working on, we could go to the authorities.
Well, I'll risk it if you will.
It's worth a chance. We're lost anyway.
Okay. Open the door. So far, so good.
Come on. Let's take a look at that data.
Yes, but don't interfere with the robots.
Don't worry. Let's look at the screen. Whew. Listen to this. Tests in the 47K12 group with Marlin cigarettes pulled 80% using the soft feminine approach. Indications are that an extension of this approach would sell at least 70% nationwide. On the feckle freezers, the direct elevator pitch pulled only 10%. This should be abandoned and a new series of high persuasion elements introduced. Henry, do you know what this means?
I haven't the faintest idea.
I don't blame you. It's crazy, but it fits the facts when I think about it. Do you know who's behind this?
Martians.
Not Martians, Henry. Advertising men.
What?
I don't know who they are or how they've done it, but somehow they've taken Tyler Town over. They've got you and me and 30,000 others right under the thumbs.
Hypnosis.
Hypnosis drugs. Maybe some kind of ray or something. However they do it, what happens is that they let us live through a single day. During that day, they pour all kinds of suggestions and propaganda into us. At the end of the day, they evaluate the results, see how we've reacted. Then at midnight, they wash the day out of our minds. And the next morning, we start the same day over again with different stimuli.
No, I can't believe that.
I know it sounds ridiculous, but think of it. They can run the perfect test, and on a whole community. Do you know what that means? Suppose one man learned how to influence people 100%. In a year, he could sell us anything from freezers to political candidates.
All of us here today do not want to see our election victory stolen by emboldened radical left Democrats, which is what they're doing, and stolen by the fake news media. That's what they've done and what they're doing. We will never give up. We will never concede. It doesn't happen. You don't concede when there's theft involved.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
We're guinea pigs, Henry. This whole community is one big test tube for propaganda research.
What do we do?
Somehow, we get out of this town and get to the FBI.
Do you think we can?
Yeah, it's worth a try. Come on.
Wait.
What is it?
Look. Look. There's somebody coming down the tunnel.
We've got to hide.
Quick, behind the circuit box.
Shh. Good Lord. It's Dorchin. The head of the agency that does our advertising.
Quiet.
All right, Burkhardt, come out. We know you're in this room. Miss Horn has informed us that you remember. I must warn you, it's useless to buck us. Come out peacefully and let our maintenance crew adjust you properly. So you don't remember from one experiment to the next. It'll be quite painless. If you don't come out peacefully, we'll have to get you.
Henry, take this wrench. When I give the word, jump him.
He may be armed.
We've nothing to lose.
Very well. I'm coming after you.
Now!
Burkhardt, I've killed him.
Wait, and get his coat unbuttoned. Maybe his heart is still beating. Henry.
What is it? What's wrong?
Look, underneath his coat.
Oh, heaven help us.
It's a robot. A humanoid robot.
Robot rules of order. Learning to live with cyborgs, surrogates, and drones in your personal neighborhood. Part 4. Tobar visits his old neighborhood.
The baby sister's in a cube and miners at the market. Poke a toke, in all four down.
Oh, oh, little area resident.
Dig the servo
with
the
pistol
soon.
Oh, no. I'm Tobar Radar Robot Meat.
Hello, man. I'm Flesh Gordon. Shame.
Oh, no danger. I can see a magnet in your hand.
Wait, turn it towards the sun.
Oh, no. My eyes. I'm... Rule one. Never point a robot towards the sun. Don't put magnets on their nuts or joints or balls. Don't give a robot some. Get down, Levon. Never club, swindle, or perforate your robot, or put it in an old car and roll it off a cliff. Remember, be fair. We are not programmed for defense.
Designed to look like Dorchin.
Come on, let's get out of here.
Wait.
What's that?
A loudspeaker.
I told you it was useless, gentlemen.
Who are you?
Mr. Dorchin, naturally. The real Mr. Dorchin.
What are you trying to do to us?
Merely trying to prevent you from damaging my experiment, gentlemen.
You can't get away with this, Dorchin. Sooner or later, somebody, the FBI or somebody, is going to get wind of this madness.
Oh, now really, Burkhardt, you're quite naive. Now why don't you be reasonable and let the maintenance crew adjust you?
If I refuse, I suppose you'll kill me.
That would be quite impossible.
Oh?
You see, Burkhardt, you're already dead.
Dead?
You're shocked. It's quite true. You and everyone else in this town were killed by premature atomic blast at the Control Chemical Plant. The blast occurred at 7 a.m. on June 15th. That's the last thing imprinted on your minds. That's why you wake up screaming each morning.
It isn't true.
Oh, but it is. What I and my associates did was take the brain circuits from your dead bodies. We stored them in electrochemical batteries until we had a chance to rebuild the cities and begin our tests.
Do you think I believe a fantastic tale like that?
I imagine you find it incredible. Of course, we didn't rebuild everything exactly. After all, it only has to last for a single day. June 15th. At midnight, we turn off the power and wash out the memory of the day. You and your friend Swanson, unfortunately, have defective circuits. You'll remember.
Burkhardt, it's no use. We're trapped. Please give up.
Not me.
But what can we do?
We can make a run for it down the tunnel. Come on.
It's useless, Burkhardt.
Keep going.
It's useless. Useless. Useless.
Burkhardt, it's no use. You go ahead. I'm finished.
Look, we're almost at the end of the tunnel. I can see a door. Here, I'll help you.
I can't.
Just a little further.
No.
Now, here. This door is open. It opens. Oh, no. I don't believe it.
I can't run anymore.
Come on.
Sorry. You go ahead. Look. I'm finished.
Look, we're almost at the end of the tunnel.
I can see a door.
I'll help you.
I can.
Just a little further.
The ledge dropped away into a chasm so deep they could not see the bottom.
This door is open.
Beyond was only a glare so bright that their eyes could not stand to look into it. And yet, just beyond the limit of their vision, something towered. Something so huge it was almost inconceivable. Something...
Burkhardt!
Yes?
This is Dorchin. Now, do you understand why it's useless?
The great looming figure moved closer. It seemed to take shape now, and yet it was so gigantic as to be unbelievable. It came closer. The glare was partially blocked, and then Guy Burkhardt knew that the towering shape was none other than Dorchin himself.
You see how I did it, Burkhardt? I took your brain circuits and had them reduced so they could be transferred to tiny humanoid mannequins. That's what you are, Burkhardt. A tiny miniature of yourself. And this city, this whole experiment I'm conducting, is built on a tabletop.
It was the morning of June 15th, and Guy Burkhardt woke up screaming.
This is Nick Danger, Third Eye, all alone on the radio. Let me fill you in. There, you see? You're just a bare outline of yourself until you're filled in. But why didn't I fill myself in? I didn't understand that I was getting scaled down, that each and every second that had passed me by had marked my descent into smallness. It was my smallest case, a case I'd like to call something clever, but that turned out to be so small as to not even deserve a title. And the case started with my precious memories of that model train I so loved when I was just a kid. And Carl Sandburg don't have nothing on me. Believe me, I can stoke the fires of model patriotism with big raw-boned hymns to the old brass railroads, chugging and clanging, dragging the unseen freight of big raw-boned Americans across a perfectly scaled landscape, spewing the cotton smoke and blaring forth the realistic surge of the sound of dead locomotives of those forgotten days when we ran these trains by boiling water and making babies who could stand up and say, I may be only about 1 1/8 inch tall, but everything around me is scaled so perfectly, you'd never know it. Now do you remember your train? Close your eyes. It's radio, don't be afraid. Was it a Lionel or an American Flyer? Did it have a milk cart with an unloader that moved the white cans of milk off the car? Did it have hopper cars, flat cars, tank cars, box cars? I can see mine now. The good old Danger and Pacific, plying its steaming way between the detective factory and the customers, loading and unloading clues and revenge and recriminations. And my little case? It all started down at the station. The Danger and Pacific Railroad model train station, which looked kind of deserted, kind of glued together, like me, Danger, Nick, a small-time Dick, and a corrupt little burg we call Model City. I parked my old collectible die-cast coupe with optional monster wheels and lit up a tiny model cigarette and strolled out on the attractive, impressed brick cardboard platform to wait for old 99. I could practically see the electricity surging down the third rail. I could see the train, too, coming way off in the distance, puffing that cotton smoke out its smokestack and thrusting its tinplate drivers up and down and around with a hellish, nostalgic racket. It careened crazily as it made that last turn before the station that was just a little too tight. Well, the big hand at the transformer in the sky stopped old 99 right on the button, and before I could even believe my eyes, I saw the most gorgeous dame glide out of the sleeper car. The Pullman porter gave her a frozen grin as he handed down her bags, and I caught up with her in front of the lifelike layered peel-and-stick depot door assembly, and I said, I bet you're my new client, and you can bet I'm Nick Danger, when two eyes aren't enough. She grinned at me with a frozen smile reminiscent of the Pullman porter. Betting is immoral, pal, she said, and a third eye won't help you this time. I'm in danger, and I heard Danger was your middle name. Well, actually, it's my last name. Close enough, little man, she purred. Phew, she was beautiful, and tall, very tall. If I hadn't known better, I could have sworn she was a model. And in my world, rule two or three is don't fall for models or actresses, or physicists, but that's another story. As luck would have it, I had the Danger and Pacific gift catalog right on me. Now, if we could afford sound effects on this show, you'd hear the rustling of pages as I looked for, here we go, $175 for the tiny model cigarette. You can get that puffing smoke for $4 a yard, old 99, $1,500. Pullman Porter, $10.95, grinning Pullman Porter, $11.95. And there she was. I knew I'd seen her before. She was a model, a catalog model. Attractive female passenger, 15 smackers, and she was really something to look at. Cute little hat with a veil, $3.95 extra, secret underwear, $4.95 extra, ample bosom, optional, and a nice big solid base. You could see she wouldn't tip over easy for anyone. That's the kind of babe I like, someone with character and stability and an optional ample bosom. I loaded her into the coupe and we headed up Cardboard Boulevard. Figured I'd try to make some conversation because so far this dame was stiff as a board. In fact, she sort of lay on the diagonal on the seat and stared straight up. So, I says, what do you think of our little town? Not much, she said. Small. Looks like any other town. Well, look, there's a real nice house, urethane injection molded, super detailed. We call it Grandma Trackside's Farmhouse. And say, there's the hometown church, custom built, surrounded by big old foam rubber trees. She snorted and lit up $1.75 worth of cigarettes, smiled at me and yawned. Big boy, she said. Find a warehouse. You're going to do me an errand. She stretched like a cat. That cat was way too short, I said. He needed to be stretched. Well, that fell flat as a pancake. She didn't seem to have much of a sense of humor. She did give me an address. 15007003712197 Scale Street. You know, I guess the big guy at the controls loads places like this up with numerical precision so that everything will seem more real. Anyway, I careened the coupe down Crazy Glue Avenue over boulders of half-dried paint. Turned left on Scale, nice street. If you look close, you could see those big oak trees were really made of huge brass wires twisted together to make branches and trunks. And there it was, 15007003712197 Scale Street, abandoned warehouse, $65, finely milled strip wood, historically accurate. Uh-oh, I said. What kind of sucker do you take me for? Make up your own joke, she said. That one's too obvious for me. Listen, I said, everyone knows an abandoned warehouse is a place only made for trouble, usually full of evil men in black and white suits planning trouble for fist-swinging heroes like me. What am I supposed to do in there anyway? I said. You go in, you pick up a package, she said. On the level, I asked. Let's hope so for your sake, because if it ain't level in there, I could get rolled around good. This sounds dangerous, I said. And if I'm going to be the sap, then it better be for my usual fee. What is your usual sap? She asked. I told her it was 2,500 tiny little dollars per day in gas. By the way, I make big money on this gas thing because my car doesn't actually use any. You know, come to think of it, what does the car use? You know, sometimes it just feels like a giant hand is shoving it along the road. Probably just needs new shocks. Where was I? Oh, yeah. I didn't need any new shocks, but I was about to get one because right out of the blue, she kissed me. Whew. Certainly worth all of 2,500 tiny bucks. But it turned out to be a hot kiss at the end of a wet fist, because suddenly, from out of the roof of the abandoned warehouse, came a burst of flaming fire. You'd have thought some giant somebody would have left a tube of glue inside, because suddenly the whole place exploded. I was flung headfirst into the realistic brick siding of the adjoining gas station, but I looked up in time to see my beautiful coupe buried in a glop of molten glue. And, uh-oh, I didn't see the babe. She must have been fried alive. Suddenly, other buildings began to explode. I took off running. I was sure glad now I'd splurged on these accessory running shoes. They were so small you could hardly see them, but they got the job done. I whipped around the corner and ran right onto the tracks. Electricity hissed and burbled through the third rail, and uh-oh, bearing right down on me was old number 99 coming around again and about to run me into the ground, or in this case into the sturdy 3/4-inch plywood that hopefully formed a solid base for the world of Model City. It didn't augur well, but screw it. Danger is what you pay me for. Instead of running away, I stopped and let the big brass engine bear down on me, and then I actually leaped aboard. Listen, I'll spare you the blow-by-blow, because on this show we don't have enough non-barter income to afford costly sound effects, and we have to rely on the awesome, almost mystical powers of the written word and my considerable powers of expression to carry us through these exciting high-speed action scenes. You get the point. I got on the train. I hung on tight and tried to open the doors on the engine, but they seemed welded shut. I crawled up on the cab and leaned down and knocked on the front windshield, but the boys in the cab didn't even look up. I crawled back, all the way back to the domed observation car. $225.95? Jeez, these prices. I could see we were passing the Balsa Control Tower at Foam Core Street, which meant we were about to cross over the river. Yep, there it was, the mighty flow of the old flat white river, its dangerous latex current swirling kind of statically around the sturdy pilings of the crosstown scratch-built bridge. We swayed dangerously from side to side as I hung on for dear life. I kicked the glass and something popped loose. I dropped into the car, a longer drop than I'd expected, and when I came to, the first thing I saw, sitting at a little table with a frozen cocktail, was her. The scale model of a model. How had she got here? Wasn't she burned alive? My head was ringing with questions. I stood up on tiptoes to look out the window. Outside, the world seemed to be going by more slowly than I'd thought. She lit up a cigarette with a huge Zippo and blew a big cloud of cotton smoke from out between her delicious lips. You're a sucker, Nick. Don't you get it? I don't get much of anything anymore, I said. Someone's changing the scale, see? You're too small for this world, or hadn't you noticed? Now that she mentioned it, something was different. I was staring right at her knees, and they seemed bigger than before, and so did the rest of her, and the other passengers were bigger too, and they all laughed loudly, staring straight ahead. Either I'd shrunk or they'd got bigger. Their imperfections were certainly huge. I could see rough filings of metal all over them, and they looked crudely painted. Some of them still had flanges sticking out from their noses and chests. You're an N-gauger in a G-scale world, pal, her voice boomed, and cotton smoke billowed around her. The laughter from everyone was overpowering. And it looks like G-scale means Gulliver to you, Shorty. Hey, I said, who is this someone who's changing the scale? How would I know, she sneered. I needed a little guy, that's all they told me. There's major scales and minor scales. That's the kind of deal it is, it's all relative. Well, that kiss you gave me wasn't a relative's kiss. I gave you a G-scale kiss, and in your N-scale world, it was explosive. She sure had that right. I asked her the question. What if things had been different, I yelled. What if I'd loved you? Her knees had disappeared, and her high heels loomed in front of me like small black buildings. I heard her voice, vast and booming. What makes you think? I didn't love you. When I came to. Came to what, I wonder? I've never seen where I came to. I've been around that track 1,000 times. I've been the detective of love and the detective of hate. I'd seen it all. And now I had to face the fact that my world was shifty to a degree that my third eye had never noticed. Third eye? You forgot I had it. You forgot that I'm Nick Danger, third eye? That's the whole point, really. Push back the hat. That's why we detectives wear these fedoras, by the way. Push back the hat and let old Triple Take soak up the view. Well, that's the problem. The third eye really doesn't do much seeing. It's just kind of imagining. And it always imagines things scaled back the way they were, you know. The big steam engines chugging through the night, the little lights on inside the sleeper cars, little lights on inside the windows of the buildings, little light inside the old Bakelite radio. Inside that perfectly scaled radio, where a little voice is heard forever, that you should stay tuned for the thrilling adventures of Nick Danger, Third Eye, and the mystery he likes to call Scaled Down Danger.
Mm-hmm.